I looked at your website. I looked at kind of your company, and it looks like what you do is you facilitate the democratization of attention, pretty much.
Democratization of, what'd you say?
Attention.
Well, I like to use the term time and data.
Time and data, yeah.
Web 2.0 for 20 years was built on Facebook, Google, creating these great products that allowed them to collect enormous data on every person in the world. And then they monetize that data, advertisers pay them. Well, we're about letting people earn from their time and data.
Right. So you allow advertisers to go directly to their target prospect and pay the prospect as opposed to one of these platforms, Facebook or YouTube or whatever the case may be. And they pay the potential customer as opposed to paying these platforms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why, I don't know, the way I see it is like that, it's kind of like you're taking the power out of like these big corporations' hands and then putting it back into like the clientele's hands. That's how I see it.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, this trend, I mean, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Twitter, you know, are the biggest companies in the world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, or amongst the top, you know, the biggest companies in the world. And they've built it on individuals' data.
Right.
So the data is an enormous asset, has enormous value, but the individual who really owns the data doesn't get paid a penny, right?
Right.
So I think this trend
is
totally reversing. For the next 20 years, there's going to be hundreds of companies like ourselves that have, you know, like there's hundreds of companies that try and take advantage, collect data, and then sell it to advertisers or other people. There are going to be hundreds and hundreds of companies that are doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's where you get the Cambridge Analytica stuff and all that with like them getting the data from Facebook and using that to, you know, use it for whatever reasons, political reasons or whatever. So I love the idea of putting the power back in the clientele's hands. How did you think of this idea and what made you start this company?
Well, number one is we're in the cryptocurrency business. I love the idea. You know, I became a huge Bitcoin advocate and I really got excited about cryptocurrency.
Interesting.
And because I'm very familiar with the problems of fiat currency, which, you know, dollars, euros, yen, that have unlimited money printing with no rules, no governance, no transparency. Right. And really, I think we're seeing the last breath. And it will go on for a while, but, you know,
probably 5 years, 5 to 10 years.
Or maybe it'll go on forever. But how somebody trusts a dollar or a euro or a yen makes no sense to me. I mean, it's just, there's nothing there. It's just a political tool, really. And crypto addresses all of those problems. And then, but this business, I built a company called RealAge, which was really a permission marketing company,
right,
which collected data. People would take these health questionnaires and learn their real age. And what we did was we collected all this, you know, we had this enormous amount of data, but we would ask permission to people, would they like to receive information about products and services that can make their real age younger? And it was a true opt-in, a real opt-in. And people would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
It became this great platform for anybody with a health product to connect to the appropriate audience. And people loved it. And we sold it very successfully to Hearst Corporation, you know, 10 years ago. So nice. That's what, you know, so we're kind of recreating that, but with crypto as the vehicle for people to want to engage and opt in and, hey, yeah, I want to get paid.
Got it. So the vehicle is crypto. The currency is crypto then.
Correct.
Gotcha. I wasn't sure if you were using that as like a way to analogize the process, but yeah, no, I understand 100%. Wow. That's extremely new age for sure. Do you think, this is a pointed question, because I'm sure you've done a lot of analysis on the market. This is a product that people absolutely need. It's like broccoli to, I'm not even sure this is a good analogy, but like, do you feel people are ready for this type of product, or do you think it's going to take some time for people to go, oh, this is it?
Well, it's early. I mean, there's just
early, yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, there are people in our ecosystem that are doing similar things, that are growing their audience. You know, the Brave browser and basic attention token is doing really well. They have 15 million users. You know, when we launched, we got to 300,000-400,000 users like that. And
wow.
And we realized we've had some issues about, you know, we're all about, we don't want fake accounts. We don't want bots. We don't want, you know, so much of the internet is the numbers you read are fake. And, you know, the number of Facebook users, Google users, they're fake.
You think so?
Oh, I know so.
like LinkedIn, it's like 600 million. You think that's a fake number?
I think the active users is probably 20-30% of that.
Yeah. Oh, the active users. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's probably in general 600 million, but yeah, 30% of them are active. Yeah.
Yeah, and great. Facebook's probably a better example. They say they have 2.1 billion accounts. I'll bet you 60% are duplicates or fakes. Easy. No, yeah. Saying that, still, if they have a billion people or 800 million, it's still a lot.
Do you think it hurts their advertising numbers if they say, hey, we have 2.1 billion accounts, but only 60% of them or 40% of them are active? Do you think that they're misportraying to advertisers what they're getting?
Absolutely. No, yeah. Advertisers and the agencies and that world that I know extremely well, no, they're very, very feel like they've been deceived in terms of the amount of users. I mean, there are these click farms in the Philippines and Indonesia that just, you want a million likes, you're a Procter & Gamble manager, and somebody says, hey, we want to get all these likes on Facebook. There are these click farms in the Philippines where there's, you know, people just clicking.
I mean, yeah, people miss the point if they do that completely.
there's just a lot of deception in digital marketing. It's just riddled with problems. But still, even with all those problems, there are real numbers there.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of positives to a lot of problems, but the problem is, like, you're right, we don't own our data. So because of that, it's like people, you know, Facebook or whoever owns our data, and we have no control over that. And we're giving them permission really to do that, kind of, it's kind of a gray area. Not really, but, you know, the Cambridge Analytica thing with Facebook where they took all our data and it's like, but.
Well, you know. Google is the worst. There was a headline in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about Google has tens of, you know, hundreds of millions of health records that they use. Every time you use the Google browser, every time you use Gmail, every time you use Google Maps, every time you use any Google service, that data is collected on you. Google has a file that's this thick on everybody. And then they use that data to send you advertising, try and sell you stuff.
It makes you think, like, if there was like some major catastrophe and the government had to make some sacrifices with the population, they'd have that, all that information, and they would know exactly, okay, we need to sacrifice this part of the population, that part of the population, or like, you know,
it is Orwellian. I mean, if you've read 1984,
yeah,
you know, Orwell, yeah, predicted this, you know, it's exactly what it is. It's Big Brother on steroids. It's just, but you know what? Markets are wonderful things. They correct. And, you know, we do have some freedom still. And, you know, the market is correcting. That's the whole crypto decentralization, democratization of data. The data is going to be owned by the individuals. I think we've seen peak Google, peak Facebook. And there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of companies like ours coming up and saying, hey, there's another way to participate.
Yeah. When I initially said democratization of attention, the way I meant that was people's attention, everybody's involved in the process and everybody has a stake in the matter. The advertiser is deciding to advertise, the person being advertised to is deciding. It's like a win-win. There's no like weirdness. Like with Facebook, you get that kind of weirdness. Like I'm getting all these advertisements. Why are they getting all these advertisements? They have all my data and they're actually using AI to figure out who I am as a person, which is kind of like insane, you know, but.
Yeah, no, exactly. And our platform is, we collect data, by the way.
Yeah.
But you're totally opted in. But that data is used so you can make the money. You know, that's the point.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah, I mean, it's like more of my choice, I think. Because as opposed to like, I don't know, this isn't my choice. I'm getting this advertisement. I didn't really say I want this advertisement. Yeah.
Right. No. We're the whole name of the company, permission.
Yeah.
No.
Crazy.
The name of our currency is ask. ASK. So it's all about asking permission. And it's truly opting in. You know, if you come to our platform and you start clicking on headphones, you know, and looking around to buy headphones or something like that, we might send you an email. Would you, here's 50 ASK. Offered to you by Sony to go click on, look at their headphones, but they're asking permission and they're giving you a value for your time and data. And if you don't want to participate, you don't.
Yeah. I want to flesh this out with you. Cause I'm going to express, because I think this actually helped the audience and help you, like, you know, if the audience is interested in your product. I think what people think sometimes with regards to cryptocurrency, it's kind of like a hit or miss. Like either somebody's completely bought into cryptocurrency or they're not really bought into cryptocurrency because, well, it's really popular, but one of the reasons they wouldn't is because you said you have ask as a currency, right? Is that subject to going up and down and like?
Well, we want to obviously have it be stable, but you know, it is liquid and sure. It will be traded. And yeah, it can go up and down, but the idea is it becomes more we want to have the network effect, meaning the bigger the network gets created, the more applications that ASK is used in, the more users that own it, it becomes more liquid, it becomes more exchangeable. I mean, I can't say that it's going to appreciate. Can't say that. But what we want is the network effect to kick in.
So I'm kind of curious because you've scaled this company. Do you mind if I ask you what you've scaled this company to, how many employees you have? And
yeah, we're a small company right now. We have about 22 employees, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool. Go ahead.
But the idea is to get very large and, you know, so.
I think you will 100%. And you have some investors behind backing you as well.
Yeah, no, I've actually, you know, our company has some roots. We were a deep technology company for several years and then we focused on blockchain and crypto. And so we've raised a lot of money over the years, but almost $50 million. So.
Yeah. Okay. And can I get your, I don't want to like, I hope you don't mind if I ask you like what your strategy is, what your plan is. Cause I feel like if there's a competitor out there and he's listening to this or she is listening to this.
No, listen, like, our strategy is to grow the use cases for ASK.
Uh-huh.
You know, think about it. E-commerce is the big one. Sure. Hey, you want to take a look at these headphones? Here's ASK to look at this ad. Survey taking. Watching videos, watching people's ads, gaming, dating, you mentioned LinkedIn. Recruiting is the perfect application. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. I have a professional account or whatever. I get 50 emails a week. I mean, they're almost all spam, right? I'm not interested in people. But if somebody offered me a value to look at their email, I wouldn't mind it so much, right? Hey, here's 100 ASK. Look at my email, right?
They did research on you. So with LinkedIn, so Ansar was an employee of mine. She reached out to you. What stood out about what she said?
Hey, you want to do an interview? I mean, no, PR is an important part of, all PR is good PR. And so I'm very open to interviews. And
yeah, so let me ask you this. Okay, so part of the problem is that you have to make this known, right? And right now, you have 300,000. You had 300,000 immediate users on the platform, so that's awesome. But part of the problem is
we need hundreds of millions. We're trying to get to hundreds of millions.
100%. So, though your the foundation of your philosophy is to take the control away from LinkedIn and Facebook, that's the foundation of your philosophy. Don't you at some point need to use some of those platforms to brand yourself, at least to get to a certain inflection point? And then, are you just focused on like word of mouth? Like, I'm kind of curious.
No. We're focused on permission marketing, mm-hmm. meaning if we send you an advertisement, we're going to offer you something. That's what permission is, meaning I want your time. I'm going to offer you something for your time and engagement. So a big part of our user strategy will be, we'll use Facebook and Google to advertise, but we're going to say to you on that ad, hey, come become a permission member and we'll give you 100 ASK, to sign up.
Do you think some of these platforms will become privy to what you're offering and then see you as competition and then want to
shut us down?
Yeah, try to prevent you from advertising on their platform. Do you think that will happen?
We're not big enough for them. No, I don't think so. I mean, specifically because they're under antitrust investigations all the time, and the last thing they want to do is impede a startup, from growing. So, I mean, clearly that's been their mentality for many years, but I think. Because of the Justice Department and the global antitrust investigations, that the last thing they want to do is, screw around with a startup and try and prevent them from doing stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, if you get big enough, they're going to want to do something. Like there's a benefit reward, benefit detriment, I guess, scale where like if you get big enough, it you could shut them down, but.
Listen, that's a good problem to have. I mean, I'm not, we're a ways away from that, but.
Oh yeah. How many users are you currently at right now?
I don't know the exact date. We've slowed down a little bit because we've had to make some real improvements on our platform. We started as a pure ad watching platform. We've added e-commerce and we're going to be adding survey taking and all kinds of other issues. So we haven't stepped on the gas. We're about to get listed on major exchanges, crypto exchanges.
Oh, really?
And once that happens, that's when we step on the gas because we need to have liquidity in the crypto. Right now, it's not liquid and it will be soon. That's our goal. And
are you thinking about being listed on like a public market, like OTC or?
There are crypto exchanges and I'm not even supposed to, I'm not supposed to talk about that. So.
Oh, okay. No worries. Okay, cool. No worries. So tell me a little bit about your backstory. So initially you were like, I'm going to start this. What clicked in your head that made you want to start this particular company? Because obviously you're an entrepreneur, you're a serial entrepreneur, but what got you this idea, this specific idea?
Well, again, I've been in this permission space for a long time. The company Permission, it used to actually have a name called Algebraics, we were a mathematical data technology, and you know that it was applied to databases and blockchains. When blockchain started coming out, we said, "Can we apply this to blockchain?" And then, you know, the answer was yes, and we have our own blockchain, and crypto is only made possible by a blockchain. Which allows for all transactions to be visible, transparent, and immutable. Every transaction on a blockchain is recorded forever. Imagine if every dollar transaction was recorded forever and you can go search it. That's what crypto is. And that's why it's so exciting. I mean, it's just the transparency. I mean, just imagine every dollar transaction, you could get a, go search it and say, who, you know, and, you know, and when people talk about drug dealers using crypto, I mean, they have no clue. I mean, it's so, it couldn't be more opposite of the truth, meaning I'd rather have a bag of dollars and transfer them. That's not trackable. But if you were exchanging crypto, that's totally trackable.
Right. I love that. I love that you're like kind of like a pioneer almost in this industry. Is there, are you have a lot of competitors?
Well, there's a lot of cryptos out there. I mean, this is just like, you know, I built a company in the dot-com era and it's that all over again. And there was a big bubble, you know, that ended in January of 2018 when Bitcoin hit 20,000 and the total market cap of crypto was almost $1 trillion. And now it's shrunk back down to about 200 billion. Mm-hmm. So 80% of the market got sucked out. I mean, and a lot of people got like lost a lot of money, just like in 1999, 2000, when the dot-com craze hit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are right now is like 2001, where the real companies have consolidated and a lot of the bullshitters are gone. And, you know, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I mean, like for your specific product along with the crypto, your specific service, do you have any specific competitor that does exactly what you do?
Well, exactly is a tough thing. No, but there's a lot of people that offer rewards for shopping and engaging. The rewards business is huge, right?
Oh yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of other people that, you know, offer rewards for engagement. And so there's a lot of models that are similar, mm-hmm. you know, but doing exactly what we do, no.
Got it. Got it. I love it. So you said you've gotten, you know, $50 million in seed funding. How did you? Well,
not exactly. I mean, that's funding over several years. So.
Oh, several years. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So that's how most investments. But so if you're listening, most investments, the way they work is they'll agree to a certain amount, but they'll give it to you, you know, if you hit certain benchmarks, right? Is that like how it works, Neely?
Well, that's some venture deals are structured that way, but
not all of them.
Ours have not been structured that way.
Okay, cool. So what did you do to, for anybody's listening, what did you do to get that type of investment? Because obviously you can scale with that. Seems like you're on a good path. It seems like, to me, this is what this seems like, this company. It seems like you're going to tread along for like maybe 5-10 years, and then you're going to reach this inflection point where it like shoots up like crazy. Where it's like you get like 500 million users. And because somehow, you know, people start figuring it out, they're like, oh, wow, this is amazing. But tell me like how you specifically got your, how did you even talk to investors? Who did you talk to? How did you go about reaching out to them?
Well, again, it's, you know, let me be, when you're starting a business and, at the end of the day, it's the CEO, founder, entrepreneur, who's the product. I mean, investors that are investing in a startup, they're really investing in the founder CEO's vision and their ability to execute. They're not, you know, because startups take all kinds of twists and turns as we have, You know, what you pitch an investor isn't necessarily what comes out at the end of the day. and so it's really your reputation. It's your personal brand and reputation and people's confidence in your ability to make them money. It's that simple.
Yeah. And so, okay. So people hear different things, right? So one thing that I've heard from, I interviewed a guy named Brandon Bornanson, Seamless. He owns Seamless.ai. It's pretty cool software. It's really awesome. I'll tell you about it if you want to hear more about it. But what he did was he went to like 330 investors or venture cap. I'm not even sure if it's investor capital firms or investors. And he got rejected by like almost all of them until he found one that was interested in that kind of, he was able to be put into that guy's network. Was your process a little bit like that? Or was it just hard work over a long period of time, but you built a reputation and people just wanted to invest with you?
Yeah. It's called 25 years of building. And giving returns to investors. Almost all of our investors are people that invested in previous companies.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
A lot of investors made 20x their money at RealAge. I had other companies that they've made money. So that's, so it's a career. It's not the business. So listen, what's unique about business? It's businesses, and this is, and the popular culture is so wrong. Business is a creative art. It's like painting or music or
true.
creating a business is a creative endeavor, and it requires just so many, taking so many inputs and trying to create this business that lives. It's an organic thing, and it's very artistic and. So it's really about the people that are doing it. And,
What did the last company you built, what did that get to? Like how large was that regarding employees?
In terms of what? Audience?
Employees.
Employees, we had about 110.
110. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. So you can provide 22 employees, 110. You have employees in both companies. You're probably looking to scale to 10,000. That's how I read you a little bit.
Oh, okay. My job is to build a business and make money for our investors, right? You know, what happens, that's my focus, is how to take care of all the constituents from the users on the platform, the advertisers, our employees, our investors. So you got to take the whole package. And my job is to optimize for everybody. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit about hiring and firing? Like, I don't know how much you want to get into this, but like,
well, I'll tell you this. The reason I was late, and I apologize for that, is I was having a very dynamic, we'll use that word, discussion with our chief technology officer about some performance of our employees. Look, the most important thing for the CEO's job is to make sure, you know what rowing is?
Yeah.
No.
Everybody's doing their
everybody's
part.
Everybody's got to be in sync, doing the same thing in perfect harmony. And a lot of times you can get some smart people that are rowing in a different direction. And that doesn't, you can't have that.
Yeah.
That's the CEO's job, is to make sure everybody's rowing in the same direction. And if somebody doesn't have the right different idea, doesn't matter how smart they are, how hard of a worker they are, they don't belong. And that's what you gotta have.
Is there a caveat to that? Because what if, let's say somebody has a great idea that could really tremendously benefit the company. So you could read what you just said in many ways. So one way you can read it is we have a mission. This person's not in line with our mission. And because of that, they're the wrong employee. Or they could read it like, well, from both, I'm playing devil's advocate here. They could read it like, well, if this person's presenting ideas that would tremendously benefit the company and that doesn't align with your thoughts, and you just kind of brush it under the rug, or you just say, that's not something that we want to do. where do you stand with regards to that? Do you also have an open mind to employees that go, hey, we need to do this?
Totally.
Yeah.
We have a policy called brutal honesty. I mean, we want people to be brutally honest and challenge the thinking. I want that. But somebody's got to make decisions, right?
Yeah.
And I want to hear. Now, if you're an employee that doesn't agree with the strategy or the tactics, I want to hear about it. Make the case. Let's talk about it. But I got to make a decision, right? You can't do everything.
That's
you
true.
Make a
That's
decision.
True.
And okay. So what I would expect is if there's a disagreement between me and an employee, I want to hear it, but I make a decision and then you got to be on the right. You got to row. You can disagree, but you got to commit. But if you can't commit to the strategy,
Yeah, I have a different read of what you're saying. Yeah, so now I have like a better understanding. It's like, well, look, you can express your ideas. I'm willing to listen. We may even implement the ideas, but I got to make the decision because from the CEO perspective, there's a lot of facets to your business that not everyone in your company understands. So they may be telling you something from one angle, but you're seeing like all like 50 different angles, and you're like, well, we did that, you know, this over here would crumble. Or if we did this, you know, it would misalign, you know, our mission or whatever the case may be. And so that's what you're expressing. And I think in that period, you like your job is to communicate that well. But then once you communicate that well, it's like you gotta, I made the decision. Please follow that path, because if you don't, then because of what I see on all these from all these different angles, it could make us unsuccessful, or create disharmony within the company.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I definitely want disagreement, but once you disagree, you get the facts out there. I want to hear the facts. Somebody's got to make a decision, and you make a decision, and then okay, it's called disagree and commit. You know, I mean, I'm all about that, but if you can't commit, then you got to go.
Yeah. When you hire someone, do you always look at like college they went to, or are you like testing them in some way? How do you define who would be?
That's the toughest job. I mean, look at it. It's no different than building a sports team or any team. You know, there's no formula. You know, I don't have a formula. You just got to.
Just go off gut. Yeah.
Well, it's not gut. I mean, you know, you have certain criteria that you're looking for, but you know, again, every person is unique. Every business is unique. There's no formula for success.
Yeah.
There's just, you know, commitment to facts, commitment to reason, commitment to hard work, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So let's get into the, let's say this employee is not falling in line with the mission, right? At what point, how do you bring this? And I want to go back into, I'm going to talk about that just in a second, but say they're not in line. What do you do to fire them? How do you fire them? Like,
I've never, you know, I've fired hundreds of thousands, you know, people, you know, it's pretty simple. It's not working out. Thank you very much. You know, I mean, there's no magic. I mean, it's just like, this isn't a good fit. It's not good for you. It's not good for the company.
Have you ever had an employee that was so valuable and you knew you had to let them go, and it was really difficult for you to let them go, but they're just like, man, what are we going to do? How are we going to find somebody like this? But they're just not a good fit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, all the time. I mean, these are issues that any business person deals with all the time. I mean,
yeah, you know,
it's building a team that is, you know, you're trying to
rock
win
stars.
The World Series. And it's no different than building a football team, basketball team, baseball team.
So you do the sports analogy a lot. Do you think, you know, in sports, you know, like if I'm born a certain way, I'm more likely to be successful at sports. Do you think that's the same in entrepreneurship, that you have to be born a certain way to be successful at entrepreneurship?
Well, to be an entrepreneur, I mean, there are certain characteristics, and it's not about intelligence. It's about grit. It's about being able to take punches all day long and keep going. And and certain people just, you know, that they'd much rather work in a big company, and you know, that's, it's not about intelligence or motivation. It's about personality type, you know?
Yeah, I could see that. But like, do you think that like somebody can choose to be an entrepreneur, or do you feel like it's more of a desire, or do you feel like there's certain traits, genetic traits that somebody has to have to be a successful entrepreneur?
No, it's more of a personality trait. So every entrepreneur I know is, and I know that's who I hang out with mostly, are people like, you know, me, and you know, everybody feels like, you know, they don't want to answer to anybody. They want to be their own boss. They want to build things.
But I feel like everybody doesn't want to have a boss. Like most everybody doesn't. Some people do. They don't mind having. Well, I would use everybody wants a leader. Nobody wants a boss, I would say.
Well, right, but again, putting the whole package together, like you mentioned, the fellow you interviewed, being able to hear no 330 times, you know?
And, yeah, that's what I find.
Be okay with that, you know, and have the confidence to keep going. That's what, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah. It's like, I wish people knew, employees knew, like, what it took to build the infrastructure of the company to so that it runs smooth, everything runs smoothly. And like, it's crazy how much some of them take things for granted that took you, like when you were doing it was like the hardest thing, and you made it happen, and it provided an infrastructure for employee and sales success, but it's like, take it for granted. It's like,
of course. Okay. I mean, listen, if you're looking for pat on the back, wait, hold on one second. The sun's in my eyes. There, that's better. You can't be looking for a pat on the back either, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I don't really need a pat on the back. I don't really need, you're right. I mean, I almost like the being, I don't know, this is going to sound weird, but I almost like being dragged through the mud almost. It's weird. And I think there's a part of that that's like, that's an entrepreneurial spirit, you know?
Yeah, you gotta like the battle. You gotta like the fight, you know? I mean, not literally, but literally, you know, you gotta like the battle. I call it a battle. I mean, you know, people say, what do you do all day? I'm a street fighter, you know? I mean, you're just battling.
I feel like, yeah, it is a battle, and it's just, it's difficult. And a lot of people don't want to do that. I mean,
well, Frank, look at, I got a 12:30 hard stop. So
awesome. Awesome. No problem. Well, how can people reach you if they want to contact you?
Hey man, CSILVER@permission.io.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.